when claims are treated as facts, it can create a trap designed for the believers of claims to fall prey to. Claims being made about Islam are preached in an attempt to deflect responsibility and blame for today's world problems from the source to, well, in many ways, the victims. My next guest has taken a look at this diversion with his recent article in National Review entitled Dispelling the Few Extremist Myth the Muslim World is Overcome with Hate. He's a staff writer of National Review, veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom, David French. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
And you can read David's article, dated December 7th, at nationalreview.com. So, as the much-talked-about claim is, from the White House to the numerous representatives from CARE that we've been seeing in the media ever since the San Bernardino shooting, that Islam is a religion of peace, and these are lone wolves, which I always wonder, how many lone wolves do you need before you have a wild pack? But that's another discussion, I guess. But when you look at statistics and the feelings expressed by the Muslim community in its and within itself, what does that do to the concept of peaceful religion and lone wolf philosophy?
Well, yeah, the idea here, the fundamental idea that the left advances is that Islam is essentially an ocean of peace-loving, tolerant people that is polluted by a tiny few isolated extremists. But the reality is that there is an ocean of hate within Islam. Not every Muslim, of course, and there are hundreds of millions who are not hateful, who are peace-loving. But when you actually look at poll questions and you drill down on what Muslims across the world actually believe, it's incredibly sobering. So, for example, overwhelming majority, 74% of the citizens in the countries of North Africa and Middle East that are Muslim-dominated countries have anti-Semitic attitudes. Even outside the Middle East, anti-Semitism often dominates majority Muslim countries. It's an incredibly powerful presence in Malaysia, which is thousands of miles from Israel in the Arab-Israeli conflict. It's got a horrifying presence in Indonesia. I mean, so anti-Semitism is incredibly widespread, but that's just sort of the base level of bigotry. When you move on and you begin to look at how many Muslims want to impose Sharia law and what they believe in the context of Sharia law, it gets even more disturbing. So in many countries, including Pakistan, including Egypt, overwhelming majorities of the population want to impose Sharia law. And of those people, overwhelming majorities want to believe that a person should be, for example, executed if they leave the Islamic faith. And then moving from there, if you look at the actual numbers of people who don't just want to impose Sharia, but actually sympathize with terrorists, in other words, approve of Osama bin Laden, approve of ISIS, the numbers are in the hundreds of millions of approval for Osama bin Laden. And just of a few countries surveyed, just a few countries, not even the whole Muslim world, the number of people who expressed support for ISIS was 50 million. And that was in a limited survey of a few Muslim countries. In Pakistan, a staggering 72% of all of its citizens could not bring themselves to condemn ISIS. So to say that there's no problem but for a few extremists makes no sense. And it's out of that wellspring of hatred that jihadists spring. And it's not a tiny few jihadists either. It's hundreds of thousands. To give a sense of the scale of the problem, if you look at the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, which is the hardcore central power of jihadism in Iran, proportionate to their population, the Iraqi Revolutionary Guard Corps is larger than the American Army and active duty Army and Marines combined. Proportionate to the population, as a proportion of the population.
And you also write in Great Britain how there are more people, radicals in Great Britain, joining and aligning with ISIS than there are joining the British military.
Right. There's more Muslims in Britain joining ISIS than the British military. Now, think about that for 5 seconds. If you join the British military, you get generous pay, a generous pension, the respect of the British people, the use of the best weaponry in the Western civilization. It's easy to join the British military. But if you join ISIS, what do you have? You get $300 a month of pay. You're likely to die. You have to traverse across. You have to break your own nation's law to get there. You have to traverse across a battlefield before you can even find ISIS. So people are crossing far bigger hurdles to join ISIS and not choosing to join the British military when there's no hurdles to joining the British military. I mean, just let's just think about that for a minute. And we have to understand these things as facts. And to understand facts is not to be Islamophobic. It's to understand reality. And so that doesn't mean that we don't have Muslim allies. For example, the Kurds, who are battling courageously in northern Syria and northern Iraq right now, are our most faithful allies in the Middle East outside of Israel. And we deeply appreciate their sacrifice. If you look at the president of Egypt, what I'm saying is not any is no more extreme than what the president of Egypt has himself said. If he's called out Islam and has called the Islamic world and has called out beliefs that have been held, in his own words, for centuries in the Islamic world. So there are Muslims who understand the problem of what's happening here. So this isn't Islamophobia, it's truth.
Now, with David French, his article for National Review, dated on December 7th, dispelling the few extremist myth, the Muslim world is overcome with hate, nationalreview.com, is where you read that. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. David gives you a pyramid-level understanding of the how the radicalization rises and the different levels it attains and the different impacts that it creates. But as you write, David, and recently we see the call, I know, that various government officials go to mosques and say it's time for self-policing of a community, which is sort of like telling that we might as well be going up to the mafia and saying, when the Godfather says kill someone, come over and tell us instead. But it's Islam has a problem. And the moderate voices, if they're not surrendering, much like we see in Great Britain, by the way, themselves to a corruption of their so-called faith, it just becomes an issue where if they're called upon, and this has been the common reaction when self-policing was placed before American Islamic leaders, no, that's not right. You're profiling.
Well, and the very idea that... Right. I mean, the notion is that you have to look at reality and react to reality. You can't look at the world the way you want it to be and then act as if that's the truth. But the reality is that there are jihadists, they're like the classic insurgents. They're fish that swim in a sea of public sympathy. Jihadists swim in a sea of sympathy within the broader Islamic world. One of the things I pointed out in the article is, you know, look, the more you dig into this, the more bleak the picture gets. I mean, let's not forget Saudi Arabia, our quote-unquote ally, held a telethon to raise money for the Intifada in Palestine. It raised $100 million and featured such things as family members taking their six-year-old children to donation centers, dropping off simulated plastic explosives. I mean, think about that. That is conduct that if it occurred in the United States, people would be rightly horrified. I mean, there are mobs in Pakistan, 1,000 people at a time, who will gather and beat to death and burn to death Christians. So we've got issues here that go so far beyond this bizarro notion that what we have are some of the the most peace-loving and most tolerant people in the world who are just so distressed that there's a tiny few bad apples. That's not our problem. The problem we have is that there is an entire culture out there that is spawning a huge jihadist threat. I mean, if you add together Boko Haram, Hezbollah, Hamas, ISIS, Al-Nusra Front, Al-Qaeda, the Iraqi Revolutionary Guards, the Al-Quds Force, the Yemeni militias, the Taliban, you're talking hundreds, a jihadist force, hundreds of thousands of people strong, hundreds of thousands. It's not just replenishing its ranks from battlefield losses, but continually growing. So I think anytime you're dealing with hundreds of thousands of bona fide terrorists, you can't say tiny few extremists.
And you can't dismiss an event as workplace violence or a lone wolf and try to downplay because of the failures of policies and practices that are enabling this terror threat to continue to grow. The article, again, in National Review, is dispelling the few extremists myth. The Muslim world is overcome with hate. NationalReview.com. David French, thanks for bringing the facts, because that's the best way to beat back the diversions that others want to create and the enabling others want to commit. And thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.